The Senate Judiciary Committee started its confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett today. Democrats on the committee used their opening statements to talk about what a larger conservative majority on the court could mean for a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, scheduled to be heard on November 10th. Some Republican senators tried to head off criticism that the process is hypocritical after they had refused to consider a nominee in 2016, citing the need to wait until after the presidential election. Here's Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham.
This is a vacancy that's occurred through a tragic loss of a great woman, and we're going to fill that vacancy with another great woman. The bottom line here is that the Senate is doing its duty constitutionally.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the prospect of Judge Amy Coney Barrett being confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court? Are you worried or hopeful about what that would mean for issues like health care and abortion rights? If you want to see a larger conservative majority on the court, do you think this confirmation should happen before the election? Is the Supreme Court a voting issue for you, wherever you are on the political spectrum? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ali Massoud is an assistant professor of political science at Rhodes College in Memphis. His research focuses on the courts and judicial politics. Ali, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be here.
Well, when one is choosing a Supreme Court nominee, you've got, at least a handful of people to choose from. From the perspective of the Trump administration, why Amy Coney Barrett as the selection now?
Well, for President Trump, she's a very safe choice. She's reliably conservative. President Trump earlier nominated her to be on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, so she has some experience there. Her decisions have been conservative, although not entirely, and she's been vetted very recently. So this would mean that she would go through what many would expect as a very smooth nomination process.
You sent us some charts trying to give a sense of where she fit in on the ideological spectrum compared to some other potential nominees, compared to current Supreme Court justices. Where do you see Judge Barrett, again, based on the record we have of her?
Sure. So political scientists have developed measures to capture an individual's ideology. So one of the ones a lot of judicial scholars use are known as Martin Quinn scores, which place judges and judicial nominees on an ideological spectrum. So looking at her, and these are based on the judges' prior votes, right? So they're dynamic, they change as they cast each new vote. So looking at that, Judge Barrett, who would, if confirmed, would become Justice Barrett, falls somewhere in the middle between Clarence Thomas and Justice Alito on one side, on further to the right, and falls in between them and Chief Justice Roberts and President Trump's more recent nominees, Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh. So what this suggests, what these ideology scores suggest, that should Judge Barrett be confirmed, that she would be closer to Justices Thomas and Alito, but a little bit to the left of them. And then there would be another coalition of conservative justices, which would be to the center right, which would be Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Kavanaugh.
And then the move from Justice Ginsburg to a potential Justice Barrett would be a pretty big shift on the court, right?
Yeah, it's a very significant shift, because Justice Ginsburg was on this ideological spectrum, was furthest to the left. So any move away from that, even if there was another liberal justice, would be a move away from where she was on that scale. But a justice to the right would certainly move the median in a strong way. And it appears that Judge Barrett, compared to President Trump's prior nominees, Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, would move the pendulum a little bit further to the right. So it would give the court a solid 6-3 majority in favor of conservatives.
Now, a weird thing about our judge process in the United States, whether it's a confirmation process like for a U.S. Supreme Court judge or a statewide election like we have here in Wisconsin for our Supreme Court, everybody wants to know how they're going to vote on different issues, I think, as far as members of the public who are paying attention. And the one kind of question that these judges will not answer is how they would vote on particular issues. So I don't know. Is there a disconnect between what we want to know and what we find out?
Sure. So this goes back to the unsuccessful confirmation process Robert Bork. And what we've learned from that and what judicial nominees have learned from that, both at the lower court levels and at the Supreme Court level, is that you're best served, you increase your chances of successful confirmation by not answering specific questions. This is a precedent that's been followed by judicial nominees since, right? So what they do is they talk in general terms about their philosophy, how they would potentially rule, how they view precedent, how they view law, existing Supreme Court doctrine, but they refuse to answer questions about individual issues. And usually the reasoning they provide is it's something that's very intuitive and we can buy, which is that some of these matters are likely to come before the court. So they would not want to bias their judgment by disclosing and prejudging the issue prior to them adjudicating that when it formally arrives to the court.
We are talking about the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. A committee hearing kicked off today. Ali Massoud is with us from Rhodes College. You could join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I'm so excited for Notre Dame. I am a graduate from Notre Dame myself, and I was surprised to learn that she'll be the first appointee or nominee not having graduated from Yale or Harvard. And I think Notre Dame is an excellent choice, because when you're a student at Notre Dame, you're taught about the God, country, Notre Dame. You're taught about Notre Dame values. And one of those values is the sanctity of human life. And what that means in our Constitution, for example, is that the right to life comes from our Creator, not from the government. The government doesn't give us rights. Our inalienable rights come from our Creator, and that's in the Constitution. So for all those Catholics who prayed for an end to abortion, I mean, she's an excellent choice. Our nation will be blessed tremendously when we finally stop killing babies.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I think he's referring to the Declaration of Independence there with the rights coming from the Creator. But that aside, Ali, your thoughts on her educational background and her connection of faith to the law, as Jeff was bringing up there.
Yeah, so one minor correction I would make is that to what Jeff said is that, yes, she would be, if confirmed, the only justice that's active, that has not graduated from Harvard or Yale Law School. But there have been justices in the past, but she would be the only one on the current court. In terms of there's a lot of discussion, especially on Roe v. Wade and the issue of abortion. I think one of the things that's important to understand is that a single justice, while they can sway the vote, the majority usually has a more muted impact, right? The justices are a group of nine, and even if there's a split ideological coalition of conservatives versus liberals, you still have to craft an opinion in a matter that holds on to that majority, right? One of the things that does, especially with Chief Justice Roberts wanting to preserve the legitimacy of the court, is to make sure that the court doesn't veer too far off to the right or to the left. So it's possible the Supreme Court takes a different position based on changes in the membership of the court, but you do have to maintain that and preserve that majority without alienating other votes.
Jeff, thanks for calling in. We're talking to Ali Massoud, assistant professor of political science at Rhodes College, looking at Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett and the confirmation process getting started today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the prospect of Judge Barrett being confirmed and giving the court a bigger conservative majority? Should this confirmation process be happening now at all, do you think, based on the Merrick Garland nomination being put off till after the election? What issues are you worried about, hopeful about, with a possible change on the court? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Ali Massoud, assistant professor of political science at Rhodes College, looking at the confirmation hearings this week for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the nomination. What do you want to hear from and about the nominee in these hearings? Whether you think the process should be going on now at all, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. There's been some talk, Ali, about will Democrats want to add justices to the court if this nomination goes through and if they won, obviously, the presidential election. What are your thoughts on this idea of so-called court packing?
Yeah, so court packing is getting a lot of attention. We first became familiar with this phrase during President FDR's presidency, where he threatened to pack the court because the Supreme Court was consistently ruling against his policies. In contemporary times, while this is an idea that's been floated around, it's very unlikely. We're making lots of assumptions. The first assumption is that the Democrats would win the presidency. In addition to that, the Democrats would need to win a majority in the Senate. And if that were to happen, the United States Senate would have to change its rules. In 2017, the U.S. Senate changed its rules to go to a simple majority when it came to confirming Supreme Court justices. Now, in order to add additional justices to the court, you would have to change Senate rules that would go beyond just judicial nominees. So you'd have to pass legislation to add additional seats to the court, whether it's one seat or multiple seats. And in order to do that, that would be subject to the senatorial filibuster. So the only way to really practically pack the court would be to eliminate completely the senatorial filibuster from all legislation, for the Democrats to have a majority in the Senate to win the presidency, and then wanting to add additional justices. If that were to happen, yes, in theory, the Democrats could pack the court. They could add one or multiple members to the court. But you know, the political pendulum swings both ways. That once you set this precedent when it comes to senatorial policy, the next time another party is in office and control both the presidency and the Senate, there would be nothing to stop that party to add additional seats, right? And so we can, in theory, keep adding seats, and that would, in the long run, impact the legitimacy of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. I would say with sympathy to the idea of fighting abortion as a way of preserving human life, I am very concerned that Republicans are pushing this a candidate for the Supreme Court with the hopes that she will be a conservative activist judge that will get rid of Obamacare and in that way contribute to the ruining or loss of human life, because Obamacare has been extremely helpful to many people in the U.S. And if I can sneak in a remark about the last thing you talked about, I would say instead of court packing, considering what happened to Merrick Garland, would this be trying to counterbalance arguably ill-gotten gains, or even just having a neutral system where regardless of the number of judges, every president gets to appoint one at the beginning of a term?
Nate, thanks for the call. A couple big points there, Ali. Let's start with that second point first. Democrats say, well, Republicans did their own version of, I've seen some people call it court stacking, by holding up not just Supreme Court nominee Merrick Garland, but a bunch of appeals court justices, too. What do you think about that argument, first of all?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. So just to add a little bit of context, there's been a lot of discussion about President Trump's judicial nominees throughout the federal judiciary in the trial courts and the Court of Appeals, and now the U.S. Supreme Court. So I looked up some recent nominations from recent presidents: President Obama, President George W. Bush, President Bill Clinton. The numbers are pretty much in line. Presidents Obama, Bush, and Clinton nominated a total of somewhat over 300 judicial nominees across the judicial hierarchy. President Trump is at 218. Judge Barrett would make 219. So it's a little bit ahead of schedule. It's a little bit faster paced, but it's not out of the norm or in a different dimension. It is important to note that those other presidents were elected to two terms. So President Trump has made a lot of headway in just one term, but it's not something that it's extraordinary in terms of packing the lower courts. Now, in terms of the process, I think it's very interesting going back to the nomination of Judge Garland, who at that time was the chief judge of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals is important because it's considered the minor leagues for the U.S. Supreme Court. A lot of judicial nominees, a lot of justices emerge from the D.C. Circuit. So to be the chief judge, considered highly qualified. But what we've learned from this process is the Constitution is silent on how what the political process is. So the only thing the Constitution talks about is the president gets to nominate and the Senate gets to advise and consent, which is the confirmation process. So what we're likely to see moving forward is instead of a president getting a single nomination, what that would require is for there to be a vacancy on the court when a president is selected. What we're likely to see is that Supreme Court confirmations and perhaps confirmations for judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals only move forward when we have some uniformity in government, which is when one party controls both the presidency and the Senate. And if we have divided government where we might have one party controlling the presidency, but a different party controlling the Senate, we're unlikely to see these judicial following this, the Garland precedent, we're likely to see unlikely to see these nominations move forward.
And Nate also mentioned the Affordable Care Act. Supreme Court will start a hearing about a week after Election Day. Can you talk about Judge Barrett and how she fits into that?
Yeah, there's been some discussion that one of the impetus to move forward with Judge Barrett's nomination prior to the election is for her to have an opportunity to be on the court by the time the Supreme Court hears this case. This is likely to be the first case Judge Barrett hears as a potential new justice if she were to be confirmed immediately before or immediately after the November election. Now, in terms of, so she's been on the record criticizing Chief Justice Roberts on how much leeway he had in terms of upholding the healthcare mandate. She's not ruled on an improminent healthcare decisions. But what this suggests, what her word suggests, is that she disagrees with the outcome and would be a vote to overturn that process. So if we were to replace Justice Ginsburg's vote with a hypothetical vote by Judge Barrett, that would suggest that that 5-4 majority would flip the other way. Now, one of the things that the justices as a coalition, not just Justice Barrett, but the additional conservatives on the court have to grapple with is what do we do with recent precedents that we've announced? And if we were to come back a few years later and overturn them, what does that mean for stare decisis? And what does that mean for upholding precedent and adhering to law? So these are things that they'll discuss and contend with and will issue some kind of ruling once they take all of this into account.
Talking to Ali Massoud from Rhodes College, looking at the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, the confirmation hearing starting today. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Eau Claire. Mike, hello.
Hi, this is Mike. I am extremely disappointed, bitterly disappointed in what's going on. I think it's so disingenuous of the Republicans to do what they're doing and with regard to what they did to Merrick Garland. I think they are packing the court to have a 6-3 majority with judges appointed for life. It's going to be a very long time till it can be changed. I'm actually angry about the whole process. And I think, I truly think that the Republicans really don't care if it's Democratic or if there's any kind of consensus. I'm really not happy what's happening in the country now. They do nothing but contribute to more divisiveness.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ali. The idea that Mike is worried that this is divisive and he says a power grab in effect by conservatives.
Yeah. So just following the political process, there's nothing to stop the Republicans in the Senate from moving the confirmation forward. There have been two Republican senators, Senators Susan Collins and Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who've gone on the record saying that they oppose any nominee this in such close proximity to the presidential election. But I think the other side of this is that, well, the nomination is bearing some unforeseen event or some news that comes out, if it is successful, there might be some kind of political cost to pay. We're seeing these races for senator, including the senatorial race for the Senate Judiciary Committee chairperson, Lindsey Graham, that they've tightened up significantly. So it's possible that one of the repercussions of pushing through a nomination in such close proximity to an election is that some senators might lose their seats.
And let's ask that in our last minute. How important do you think voters see these U.S. Supreme Court seats when they're voting for a senator or a president?
Yeah, so when it comes to the Supreme Court, there's been a lot of academic research that suggests, survey research that suggests that the U.S. Supreme Court enjoys what's known as a reservoir of goodwill. Among the three branches of government, between the executive, legislative, and judicial branches, the judiciary consistently has the highest approval ratings, the most support, the highest levels of legitimacy when it comes to the broader public. But an important way to preserve that is for the Supreme Court to issue decisions that are not considered overly partisan or ideological. While they might issue some ideological decisions along 5-4 or potentially 6-3 lines, if they were to issue every decision like that, they would lose broader legitimacy, right? In the last term, only a small percentage of decisions were 5-4 along ideological lines. The vast majority, over 50% Supreme Court decisions, are unanimous. So it's important for the court to maintain that. And when it comes to the public, the public cannot hold justices or really any Article III judge, any federal judge, accountable, because these are lifetime appointments. So what the public, the only recourse that's available to the public is to vote for a president that would nominate candidates that are like-minded to them and that would be agreeable to them, and to vote for senators who would have some kind of majority that would only confirm federal judges or Supreme Court justices that are in line with their own thinking. So the only accountability really is to the elected branches, but not the court.
Ali, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
Ali Massoud is an assistant professor of political science at Rhodes College in Memphis. He talked to us about this week's confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett.